Well, you know, it's a bit of a simulcast, so as well as welcoming you, ladies and gentlemen, to the Ian Wishart Show, we're also welcoming you to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. This suddenly feels really right to me. I was actually just arguing with a whole bunch of people from the Kiwi Journalists Association, Ian, and they're all like really arrogant and like abusive and things like this. Anybody talks about anything to do with world government conspiracy or the climate change hoax or anything really that's real, you get abused for. And I was like, these are the people that are calling themselves journalists. And somebody asked me, what is the pinnacle? What are you actually really trying to do in terms of journalism? And I thought to myself, you know, I guess the idea should be to balance credibility and morality. And I couldn't think of any person who personifies more than that, not in this country, in the New Zealand field, than yourself, Ian.
That's very kind of you, Vinny. Yeah, it's a big issue, I think, for journalism, basically. I'm not sure that we have our game quite right yet as a profession.
Although you could be would be surprised that a lot of people within the profession certainly don't agree with you.
Yeah, well, I think the problem is this. I think that journalism has turned from a profession which it used to be into being an agenda-driven profession that sees itself as part of the establishment, virtually the marketing arm of the establishment, and the movement between journalism and PR these days is so wide that this sort of is an illustration, I think, of the problem that we face, because journalists are moving back and forth from news to PR, politics, left, right and centre. Just look at the Shane Taurima controversy. Here he was standing for Labor, or trying to stand for Labor, didn't make it, went back to news, ends up running Labor Party political meetings from within TVNZ's building. They should have seen that one coming.
Well, and also there's MediaWorks. What was his name? Stephen Joyce, who's CEO of MediaWorks, and then he becomes the government communication minister and then brokers, like, what was it, a $30 or $40 million bailout in unpaid broadcasting fees that MediaWorks couldn't afford because the advertisers can't be bothered advertising with them because nobody watches them because they suck. All right, that's my interpretation. I could be wrong.
Yeah, the cynic in you. I mean, look, I think the problem with my fellow journalist is this. They see themselves as evangelists for various ideas and theories, and they go out there and they print this stuff unquestioningly. You look at their stand on vaccination, on fluoride, on food additives, a range of things that the media should be far more questioning about, and they're just not.
Incidentally, one of them objected to me posting a video of Dr. Laurie Brett, who's a fairly well-known dentist in this country up in Whangarei, who's got amazing credibility when it comes to questioning the science behind fluoride, or the lack thereof. And what one of these journalists criticized me for is putting up his version, Dr. Laurie's version, and not counterbalancing it with the mainstream version. My perspective was that if you're going to be covering something that the mainstream isn't, cover that, because all of the rest of it's done, okay? If people want to be propagandized about the false benefits of fluoride, we have the Ministry of Health cracking down on everybody, we have the media in everybody's back pockets. They don't need any help propagating their propaganda. The people speaking out against it, on the other hand, those are the only people that I'm interested in helping. Otherwise, what's the point, Ian?
Well, that's one of the criticisms that I've always faced from my colleagues in the media, because Investigate magazine has done some pithy stories over the years, and we're accused of being one-sided in terms of politics. But I've said to them, look, I'm playing a long game here, because if you go back to the 1990s and the Winebox investigation, the Paradise conspiracy, that sort of thing, National was in power, and they got a bollocking from Investigate magazine. Labor came into power after that, and that was the era of Investigate, and they got a bollocking from Investigate magazine. National are back in power, and we have criticised them on a number of fronts and have certainly not been fulsome in support. The Daylight Robbery book featuring John Key on the front cover is just an example of, questioning again the wisdom of asset sales. We are there to question whoever is in power without fear or favour. And I think that's what my colleagues in the media forget. They become wedded to the politics, as in Shane Tairuma again. They wear their political colours on their sleeves, and they forget that they're journalists first and foremost, rather than evangelists for whatever political belief that they hold. And this is where our profession is running aground, because a lot of the journalists who are in practice don't disclose their political beliefs, but their political beliefs govern how they write their stories. And that's a problem, because the public see no transparency.
It's editorializing under the guise of journalism, isn't it, to a large extent?
That's exactly right, yeah.
Well, this inherently, to me, is a conflict of interest, I think, and also there's the element of can you run a successful journalism business in this country? Can you actually make enough money to survive based purely on reporting the truth? Now, if you want to make large quantities of money, I'm not sure if that's entirely possible. You can't become a multi-millionaire by only telling the truth, because ultimately many of the power brokers in this country and many others who are holding much of the finances and at bay and what have you are the ones who are more likely to be advertising on television and what have you, and certainly would withdraw their funding if their business interests were threatened by a little something called the truth.
Yeah, this is right, and I think we are a testimony to exactly this problem. If you look at Investigate magazine, when it started off, we had more readers than Metro magazine currently has. We had absolutely no advertising agency support because we were seen as politically incorrect. They didn't like our flavour of the truth. So although we're a glossy magazine with a big readership, we did not get supported. It was just actively discouraged. When the Labor government was in power, they made sure that their advertising agency handed out contracts to all the media who were favourable, and none of the media who had ever criticised Labor got advertising contracts for various government agencies that were doing big ad campaigns through the 2000s. So we certainly weren't making money from advertising. That meant that we as a magazine had to rely entirely on our readership and subscriber base to make money. And you don't become a millionaire off that. And then you get people who say, oh, well, all the hard work you're doing, you work for 6 months or 12 months on an investigation, and quite frankly, you should give it out for free because we think we deserve to hear it for free. And there's this mentality within the public. So you're caught between the devil and the deep blue sea, really, because the people with the money, the power brokers, won't pay you. And the public are not willing to pay for investigative journalism in some cases. So where do you go?
I noticed that problem myself, and what I did is I tried to find a target market. My target market is people who have woken up to the truth about the world government, how more or less most of what we're raised to believe isn't true, and the people who have fallen into that without a catch net. Psychologically speaking, it's actually incredibly traumatic to have your current view of reality warped, as it were, to the point where you almost don't believe anything the establishment says anymore. Your whole life falls apart. That's my target audience, those people who are in that state of trauma, who want to have a few laughs and be able to survive. That's basically it. And I find if I do it for them for free, they appreciate it and watch it. And if I ask for donations, they give them to me when I need them, and only as much as I need. That's what I found very interesting. It doesn't matter how much I ask for, I'll only get exactly enough to pay the bills. Which to me is quite synchronistic in a way. I recall one morning I was waking up stressed because I had my rent due, my car needed to be fixed, and you know all of these other general expenses that people with a 9-to-5 regular paycheck and what have you are a bit of a pain. But for somebody who doesn't have that regular income, it can be actually incredibly stressful to live under. And I calculated it in my head while I was walking from my bedroom to my computer to start work, and I said I needed about $500. So I went to my PayPal. And there was an exact $500 donation sitting in there by one of my listeners. You know, I think it's when you're doing the right thing, the universe shows up to support you in some way. Maybe it's a divinity. I'm not 100% sure. All I know is that I'm grateful both to my listeners and for the fact that I get to do the right thing and I don't hurt people in the way that I make money.